The following shiur is delivered by Rav Ari Marburger, Dayan based in Meisharim, and author of Business Halacha on Hilchos Choshen Mishpat, and is brought to you by the Beis Havad Le'Inyonei Mishpat, the Center for the Study and Practice of Monetary Halacha.
Dina de Malchus de Dina, I'd like to take everyone back to go through the sugya, go through some of the cases, some of the issues that the poskim have discussed over the centuries. And hopefully we'll be able to leave with a better understanding of what the concept of Dina Malchus Dina is, what the parameters are, and the historical applications to the sugya. Now let's begin with Mishnah in Nedarim. It's brought down in the Gemara and Bava Kama and Daf Kuf Yud Gimel as well. The Mishnah says, Noidrin laharogin ulacharabim ulamoichsin, she shall truma. If a murderer or a tax collector, now again, these are both said in the same breath, so you can imagine where this Mishnah is going. If a murderer or a tax collector come and they're looking for your assets, the halacha is, noidrin, you're allowed to make a neder, you're allowed to promise them, these assets do not belong to me. Even if, in fact, it's not true. Mishnah seems to be saying, is not only can you evade taxes, you can even commit a fraud on your 1040. You can write whatever you want. Now, before anyone gets too excited and goes out and files an amended return, the Gemara continues. Gemara says, "Va'amar Shmuel, dina d'malchusa dina." How could the Mishnah tell us that you're allowed to evade taxes? How can Mishnah say you can hide assets? Shmuel says, dina de malchus adina. The law of the land is the law. Now this is a very interesting Gemara. The Mishnah clearly says, you're allowed to fool the tax collector. Nobody seems to argue. The Gemara asks Akasha on the Mishnah from a member of Shmuel. Now normally we don't ask Akasha on a Mishnah from a member of Shmuel. So the Rush points out, the Rush is in Gittin, that although Shmuel is the one that says Dina de Malchus Adina, he is the Baal HaNemra, this concept, this Yisoid, is accepted by everyone. No one argues with Dina de Malchus Adina. Everyone accepts it lahalacha. Again, we're going to see there are going to be different shitas as far as what the source is. There'll be a different opinions as far as where and how to apply it. But the general concept that Dina de Malchus Adina, that the law of the land is accepted in halacha as law, is accepted according to everyone, and that's why the Gemara has this contradiction. So let's go back to the Gemara. On one hand, the Mishnah seems to tell us when the tax collector comes and wants to know how come if your 1040 showed you made $45,000, how come there is a Lexus sitting in your driveway? So the Mishnah says, no, you're allowed to tell him, the car is not mine, it's my brother-in-law's. The Gemara says, this can't be. Shmuel says, dina de malchus adina, you're bound to the laws of the land, and if a person is bound to the laws of the land, not only is he not allowed to lie, he has a proactive obligation to make sure that all of his taxes are paid. So the Gemara answers that it depends. The Gemara says, "Kan b'moiches the yesh lekitzva, kan b'moiches the ein lekitzva." It depends on the type of tax. Now, to understand what this means, the different types of tax, let's go through a very brief history of taxation. If you take a poll and you ask people, "What is your favorite organization?" Not many people will say the IRS. Doesn't make it to the list. However, if you think about it, what is the alternative to the IRS? How did they collect taxes 500 years ago? So the government didn't have a bureaucracy, they didn't have computers, they didn't know how many citizens they had, they didn't know where the citizens lived, how wealthy they were. They really had no effective way to centralize tax collections. So what did they do? They outsourced it. The king would auction off a tax franchise, And what would happen is that someone from each city, from each town, from each neighborhood, would go to the king and say, I'll give you $3 million, I'm going to become the tax collector. The king would get his money up front, guaranteed cash, he would sell the franchise, the tax collector would then go ahead and do what he wanted. Now, who do you think won these auctions? Who would be able to bid the highest price for the tax franchise? So generally, it was the biggest, nastiest, most rotten person in town who was able to extort and terrify everyone and extort as much money, the maximum amount of dollars. To him, this was a very valuable franchise. He was able to outbid the more tame and more legitimate bidders. And very often that's what happened. A thug would end up as the official tax collector, and he'd go around doing what he wanted. Now, such a system, the Gemara says, the meches de ein lekitzva, where a person would buy the right to collect taxes, there was no kitzva, there were no rules, there were no tax brackets, there were no regulations. The tax collector did whatever he wanted. He didn't like, you know, you were a little guy, he beat you up and got more taxes. You're a little tougher, you were his friend, you paid less taxes. There was no system, it was unfair, it was corrupt. That is a meches in le kitzva, and that is the case that the Mishnah is referring to. If you have the misfortune of being approached by such a tax collector, then you can say what you want, do what you want to avoid these taxes. It is not recognized as legitimate. Masha Enke, if it is a meches de yesh le kitzva, if when the king sold the tax franchise, there were rules. You were able to collect X amount of dollars per person, a certain percentage of the assets, however it was set up, but there was a kitzva, it was set up, it was fair, that is a legitimate form of taxation. On that, we say, Dina d'malchus adina, halacha recognizes the right of a government to tax its citizens, and l'kuliyama, you would not be able to make a neder, to lie and to cheat the tax collector, because this would be a case of undisputed Dina d'malchus adina. Now, although this concept seems pretty straightforward, many times I've heard people rationalize different behavior by saying that, this law or this government is ein lekitzva, it's corrupt, they take bribes, this, that, it's ein lekitzva. So, to decide whether and where these arguments are legitimate, let's go through some of the cases discussed in the Poskim. And what we're going to see is that our idea of unfair and unjust and Chazal's idea of are not necessarily the same. First example, the Chacham HaShleima discusses in Simen Shin Tzamach Tes, what happens if the government starts discriminating against immigrants? Immigrants are being taxed at a higher rate. If you're a WASP whose grandparents came over on the Mayflower, you pay one rate. If you're in minority, you came over from another country, we're going to tax you at a higher rate. Is that fair or is it not fair? Zog b'chalchma shleimai. That is considered yesh le kitzva. It's considered fair. A government has the right to say, we don't allow immigration. We're not welcoming anyone to our country. So if they decide we're going to welcome people to our country, we'll let them in, but it's our terms. They're going to have to pay a higher rate than the natives. They have every right to do so. They're the government. They own the land. They control the country. And they have the right to impose such laws. Okay, let's take it to the next step. Let's say the president would get up there and say, for now on, Jews pay higher taxes. Everyone has one rate. If you're Jewish, you have to pay a higher rate. If you have an opportunity to lie, to cheat, to get out of this tax, do we say Dina de Malchus Dina or not? Zog the Maharik, this is considered a Yesh Le Kitzva. It's considered a legitimate law, and Dina de Malchus Dina. Although it's a clear discrimination against Jews, still, the Maharik says the government has the right to do that. A government can say we're a Muslim country, we are a Buddhist country, whatever it is. We only allow people who follow this Getchka, this Avodah Zarah. If a Yid wants to come in, these are the terms. And Maharik says it's Yesh LeKitzvah, and we would say Dina L'Mechusa Dina. What about this case? What happens if the government decides we're going to tax investment bankers higher than other people? Now, I'm not making this case up. This is a Ma'arik. This is not a political statement. But in those days, the king one day decided, if you're a banker, if you're an investment banker, we're going to charge you a higher tax rate. Here, Zok the Ma'arik, it's Ein LeKitzvah. And this discrimination would not be binding in halacha. Now, the Goyim points out these two ma'ariks, these two halachas, seem to be a stira. If you're allowed to tax Jews at a higher rate, why can't you tax investment bankers at a higher rate? The Goyim asks the Kayas, just points out the stira, he doesn't answer it. It seems that there's a difference. That to discriminate against a minority or against a nation is within the rights of a government. They can say this country is for one particular religion. However, to go ahead and just to take people and just simply because of what they're doing for a living, to tax them higher because of that, according to the Ma'arik, seems to be Ein LeKitzvah. Let's move on to another case, and this case is a Pela D'Kechidosh. Everyone here has heard of the Spanish Inquisition. In Anconia in Portugal, apparently many of the Jews who escaped from Spain moved to Anconia. And there the government guaranteed their protection. They said they're free to practice, even those that had officially converted to other religions, they were free to practice Yiddishkeit, and they would be protected. And this went on for a number of years. But eventually, under pressure from the Spanish government, the king of Anconia was Chayzer. He changed his mind. And he decreed that anyone who had originally converted and was now practiced to another religion and now was practicing Yiddishkeit, they confiscated their assets, and many of the people died al Kiddush Hashem. Now, there was an incident where a person owed money to one of these Muranos, to one of these Anusim. The Murano was caught. The king decreed that anyone who had assets belonging to him had to turn it over to the government, had to turn it over to the Malchus, which is what the borrower did. Eventually, both parties escaped. They moved to another country. And they went, there was a Din Torah. The question hinged, without going through the details of the case, the question was, does a law that anyone who is a Murano, anyone who converted to Yiddishkeit and is practicing Yiddishkeit, if the government decrees that all their assets belong to the king, is that law recognized by halacha? Is there dina d'malchus dina or not? Zog d'marashdam, dina d'malchus dina. Halacha recognizes the law. It's considered yesh l'kitzvah, and it would have to be binding in halacha. And therefore, the borrower that had turned over the money to the government, that had complied with the law, did nothing wrong, and would not have to reimburse the lender. Now, in this case, again, this is a tremendous chiddush. This is even though you see a law which is outlawing the practice of Yiddishkeit, still the Rashbam says we say dina l'chus dina. There were Cholkim, Mari ben Lev, and Simon ben Dalet argued. But even Mari ben Lev, if you look at it, he argued only because the government, when they originally guaranteed these people, the Jews, protection, they said, come to our country, you're free to practice Yiddishkeit, nothing will happen. In that case, Zok Mari ben Lev, because they had been guaranteed the protection, the government cannot unilaterally change their minds and start persecuting the Jews. However, in a case where there had never been this prior commitment, it's not clear what Ma'ariv and Lev would hold. David Rivois, who also discusses the Shaila, ends off with the Sarachian. He doesn't have a clear hachra, whether you do say Dina Malchus Dina or you don't. Now the bottom line is, again, Baruch Hashem, today we're not faced with these situations, we're not faced with these kinds of laws in these countries, in this country. However, it's clear from the Poskim that if a person would like to say, this is Ein LeKitzvah, taxation is unfair, it's unjust, the bar is very high. And unless it's an extremely radical and totally unfair law, you're not going to be able to make a case that there shouldn't be Dina Mechusa Dina because it's Ein LeKitzvah. Furthermore, the Divrei Chaim says in Chelek Beis and Mem Zayin Choshen Mishpat, he says that there is that the whole concept of Ein LeKitzvah is when it's known that it's Ein LeKitzvah. When you have a tax collector who there's no system, he does what he wants, so everyone realizes what's happening. However, if there is a stuffik, if the laws seem legitimate, but who knows? Maybe behind the scenes there's corruption, maybe there's stuff going on. There's a Zerk Divrei Chaim, we assume it's the Eish LeKitzvah, we assume that the taxes are being done correctly unless it's proven otherwise. Now there's another example brought down of Ein LeKitzvah and Yesh LeKitzvah, which as we'll see will really bring us up to the next to the next Shiloh, the next Madrega in Dina Malchus Adina. The Marshal in Bava Kama, Perek Vav, Simon Yudalid, it's also Taisus and Akonis and Daphne Ches really discusses a similar issue. They deal with a case where the king passed the law that if a Jew leaves the country, all of his assets are confiscated. The king all goes to the treasury. Now Taisus says this law is considered unfair, it's considered gezel. He says, Dino de Malchusa Dino, a law of the land is a law. But if there's simply a land grab, there's just something done without any cheshbon, without any fairness, it's not within a typical law, there we do not say Dino Malchusa Dino, and there such a decree would not be recognized. The Marshal makes an interesting distinction. He says it depends what's being confiscated. If the king declares that all of your money, anything that you own, is going to be confiscated, that is Ein LeKitzvah, that is beyond, not Dina de Malchusa, that's Chamsonos, that would not be recognized. However, Zokta Marshal, if the king declares that your real estate gets confiscated, the land, your house, your real estate holdings, that, the Marshal says, the king has the right to do. Why? What's the difference between confiscating a person's real estate and confiscating his money and the rest of his assets? So Marshal quotes Rabbi Elazar Mimitz, it's brought down by the Ran and Adorim as well. And we have to really take a step back. Although, as we explained before, Dina Malchusa Dina is accepted according to all Shitas. Why? Why does a person have to listen to the government? Go through Kol HaTayr Kulo, you're not going to find anywhere a pasuk that says you're not allowed to go through a red light. You're not going to find any of the... So what is there as a person being over? Why does a person have a responsibility to follow the laws of the land? So there are a number of different explanations. The Ran in Adarim on Dachav Ches says very simply, the king owns the country. It belongs to him. Historically, when a person rented a house, they were basically serfs. People didn't own property. They were renting it's called a chazaka in many cases in the poskim. When you pay taxes to a king, essentially, you were paying for the right to live in his country. Zok the Ran, if he owns the country, he's your landlord, he has the right to set conditions. You want to use my property, you're going to have to pay real estate taxes. You want to come into my country, you have to follow certain guidelines. And therefore, Zok the Ran, you have to listen to it simply because you're a tenant. Following his rules, following his laws, are the rent you're agreeing to pay for the use of the property. Now, based on this, if this is the explanation, some poskim say Dina de Malchusa Dina is very limited. If the only reason you have to listen to the government is because they own the land, then for Zok the Ran, what happens if the government doesn't own the land? In Eretz Yisrael, the Ran explains, Eretz Yisrael was given out to the Shvatim, Even when there's a Melech Yisrael, even if he's appointed by the Sanhedrin, he has a real din of a Melech, he doesn't own, he doesn't have the right to confiscate people's land, he doesn't have the right to evict a Yid from his Yerusha, and therefore the Ran says, the concept of Dina D'Malchusa Dino will not apply to a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. Other places can take this a bit even further. And they say, if the whole reason why you have to listen to a Malchus is because they're your landlord, it's their land. So Zechar B'Lazim emits, the concept of Dina D'Malchusa Dino applies only to land use. If a king says, you want to live in my land, you have to pay this amount of taxes, this is your rent, so Dina D'Malchusa Dino will say, that's your landlord, you've got to listen. And such taxes would be considered legitimate, and you would have to pay them. However, according to these shitas, any law that's not directly dependent on land, bankruptcy, nothing to do with land, money laundering, it has nothing to do with land ownership, according to these shitas, they would not be included in the concept of Dina D'Malchusa Dina. Now there are many different shitas, you know, even within this Havan of the Ran, there are many different shitas. The Marshal says that it doesn't, we're not restricting these halachos directly to land use. The basic dinim, the basic laws that you need for a society to function are also part of your rent. You want to move into this kingdom, you want to move into this property, you've got to abide by certain rules that are needed to keep society going. And therefore the Mashal says that even according to these opinions, the basic rules that are needed to protect society would be followed. However, again, according to these, many shitas say that it's limited only to issues that impact the king. He's your landlord. He owns the land. Therefore, he has the right to say, if you want to come into my country, you've got to follow certain rules. You can't undermine my authority. You've got to pay my taxes. You've got to honor my currency. You have to follow my rules regarding bridges. These are things that they directly relate to the landlord, to the government. However, according to these shitas, if you're dealing with an issue that does not impact the government, it's a civil matter between two private citizens. According to these shitas, Dina D'Malchusa Dina will not apply. Now what comes out is an interesting halacha. What comes out that according to these opinions, and again, there'll be other opinions as well, but according to these shitas, Dina D'Malchusa Dina will apply to taxes according to everyone. Another case where everyone would agree to Dina D'Malchusa Dina would be traffic laws. The roads clearly belong to the government. If the government makes rules that if you want to drive on my streets, if you want to drive on my roads, this is the speed limit, or you can drive, but no texting or cell phone talking while you're driving, they have the right to do that. It's their roads, they own the land underneath, these are the terms of use. If you follow, if you abide by these rules, you're allowed to drive. If you don't abide by these rules, you can't. And therefore, these laws are laws that everyone would agree, Dina D'Malchusa Dina. This is all explaining the Shitas HaRan. Many Rishonim argue. And the Rashbam in Bava Basra says it most clearly. The Rashbam has a completely different explanation of Dina D'Malchusa Dina. What he says in Daf Nadal on the base is called Misim Varnunus Minhogish Mishpe Hamalochim Sheregil Mahanik Vemalchus. Any of the laws that were traditionally passed by kings, Dinohu. Any law is a din. Even if it's nothing to do with real estate, even if it does not directly impact the king, still, any of the Hanhogos, any of the traditional laws are considered Dina Malchusa Dina. Why? Everyone who lives in a country willingly accepts to abide by the laws of a country. Because everyone accepts these laws, it has a tokif in halacha and Dina D'Malchusa Dina. So according to the Rashbam, The concept, the authority, the reason why halacha recognizes civil laws is not simply because the government owns the land and they can dictate how the land should be used. It's a social contract. Everyone who moves into a country, all citizens, they're there voluntarily. If you don't like the rules of this country, if you think taxes are too high in the United States of America, you can move to Zimbabwe. There are many other countries out there that don't have regulations, that don't have taxes. If you stay here, it means you're accepting the whole package. Along with the benefits come responsibilities, and therefore, Zot Rajban, we would say Dina Demachusa Dina. It doesn't matter whether it's an issue of real estate, not real estate, any of the laws are acceptable. Now, it seems that the Ran and the Rajban are talking about two different types of governments. The Ran says Dina Machusa Dina is because the government owns the land. That sounds like a king. He came around, he conquered the country, it belongs to him. So he has the power of a king, of a malchus, and he says, Dina Malchusa Dina. The Rajbam sounds like a democracy. Everyone there voluntarily accepted the laws of the land, and therefore Dina Malchusa Dina. Now, Lamaya said this is not true. As we all know, the Rajbam did not live in a representative democracy. The Rajbam, and it was also was explaining a Gemara, which clearly was talking about a monarchy, it was talking about a king. And Afal Pikin, although we were discussing a monarchy or a dictatorship, still the Rajbam makes this point. That if you live in the country, you're voluntarily accepting the rules. Doesn't matter whether it was an elected king or not an elected king. Any citizen who decides to stay is accepting the laws and is bound to it regardless of whether it has to do with karka or not. Now, the Rajbam sounds like a very compelling argument. If everyone gets together and everyone accepts certain rules, it should be binding. What is Shan in the Ran? Why does the Ran seem to limit the authority of a malchus to own things that are relevant to land? And why does the Ran seem to say that in Eretz Yisrael, where a melech does not own the land, there would be no dina machusa dina? What does he do with the Rajbam's argument? What does he do with this claim that people accepted it voluntarily upon themselves and should be binding? So Zaktuch Sam Sefer, and it's quoted by the Minchas Yitzchok, and then there's a Ma'arik that also seems to say a very similar point. They say a tremendous chiddush. They say everyone agrees to the Svar of the Rajbam. If a person lives in a country, he's voluntarily accepting the laws, Dina Malchusa Dina, whether it has to do with karka, real estate, not real estate, it's across the board. Why does the Ran need this new justification, that the king owns the land, and therefore he has this whole limitation? Zechus Sam Sofer, although it's true that every citizen accepts the laws, that means everyone who lives in a country, they agree not to go through a red light. The laws that define their behavior amongst themselves, everyone realizes you can't have anarchy, you need a set of rules, you need a set of laws, and therefore people accept the laws of society. Zakat Sam Sefer, this is true, Lukul, everyone agrees to this halacha. The Ran is bothered by one question. His question is that while we agree not to go through red lights, we agree we're going to follow many other rules in our day-to-day behavior. Nobody wants to pay taxes. Nobody. So Zog the Ran, you can't tell me that everyone was makabal al-atzma miritzoyna matoy, if they happily pay taxes. I'm sure you have such patriotic citizens who are happy and write out a check to the IRS with a smile. But it's not the norm. Most people pay taxes simply because they have to. Therefore, the Ran needs this new rationale to explain one thing. To explain the government's right to collect taxes. However, any other law which is passed, Ultevas Nehamedina, which is there simply to protect people. There the Ran says, there the some type says the Ran would agree, we would say Dina Malchus Dina, regardless of whether it's directly tied to real estate or not, it doesn't make a difference, we would say Dina Malchus Dina. Now to summarize, we've so far gone through two basic shitas. The shitas Haran is that Dina Malchus Dina comes from the government's ownership of the land, and therefore it's limited. It's limited either to laws that define land use, or according to some opinions, laws at least that are for the direct benefit of the king. The Rashbam argued. The Rashbam said that the concept of Dina Malchus Dina is a social contract, if you will. It's the fact that people, members of society, accept upon themselves to abide by the laws. And therefore, what would come out is the Dina Malchus is not limited. Any law that was passed, the Tzaydas B'nei HaMedina, to protect society, would be covered by Dina Malchus Dina. Now the Ramah brings down both of these shitas, and the Ramah in Simen Shin Samach Tes is Machriya, like the second opinion. That any law which is passed with Tevas B'nai Medina, it's there to protect society, whether or not it's related to real estate, the Ramah says we would say Dina de Malchus Dina. This brings us to a problem. Let's say two people have a machlekes, they have a partnership, they have a business deal, and it goes sour. They try to work it out, they can't, and they end up in litigation. Now, if it went to court, if it went to civil court, the judge would do whatever the judge would do. If it goes to Beis Din, a Beis Din generally would follow, well, pull out a chosh mishpah, and follow halacha. What happened to Dina de Malchus Dina? If according to the Ramah, Dina Malchus Dina applies to any rule, any law, which is Latevis Menei HaMedina, then any time there's a private dispute between two parties, we should ignore halacha, and we should follow Dina de Malchus Dina. Zok the Rashba, and many of the Rishayim and Achrayim addressed this issue, Zok the Rashba, no. Dina de Malchus Dina has its limits. If there's an issue of taxation, if there's an issue that's relevant to the king, there, Dina de Malchus Dina applies. You've got to follow the laws, you're bound to its authority, you've got to listen. If there's a takana which is a takana libnei hamedina, there's a general rule, traffic laws, a general law to protect society. There we're going to say dina de malchus adina. However, if it's an issue of arkais, if there's a civil dispute between two Jews, there's no law saying you can't go to Beis Din. There's no law saying you can't go to arbitration. The civil court is there as a default. If two people get into a fight, they have no other way to resolve it. They'll go to civil court. The judge will pull out his common law, the precedents, his law book, and he'll pass judgment. But there's no, the government is not standing behind that. You're not doing anything wrong. There's nothing criminal by going to Beis Din. And therefore the poskim all say, in a private dispute between two Jews, we will follow halacha, we will apply choshen mishpat, and we won't apply any of the civil laws. The Chazanish points out that that's very nice if it's between two Jews. However, if there is a goy involved, Chazanish says, in those cases, there's a kpeda. The other government doesn't want you to be able to coerce the goy to give up his rights. There it could be, we would say Dina Malchus Dina, and we would very often apply these rules. Now, although the Rashba is the one that makes this distinction between Arkayus and between Dina Malchus Dina, but in a practical matter, there are many, many loose ends.
Maybe Dina Malchus Dina doesn't apply with
the negative territory. Okay, got that in a minute. There are many different Nakudas. The Rashba's discussion was, on one hand, there's a concept of Dina de Malchusa. That was when the king, when the government passes a law, you had a legislative branch of government, and there we say Dina de Malchusa Dina. In contrast, the Arkois, the judiciary branch, historically had nothing to do with the king. When they had a king, he was elected usually because he was the strongest elected. He became the king because it was a coup. He killed the old king and he was the king. He wasn't an attorney. He wasn't a judge. He wasn't busy writing laws. That he left for, they had judges. The judges followed either the religious guidelines or the precedents, the common law that it evolved. It had nothing to do with the kingdom. So the Rashi makes a very clear distinction. If it's the government, if the king says it, you've got to listen to it. If it's what a judge is, what the judiciary does, that is nothing to do with Din of the Malchus Adin. Now today, these distinctions are much less clear. The legislative branch is part of the government. It's authorized by the same government as the judiciary and the executive branch. It's all part of the same government. Also, many of the laws that a civil court will follow are passed by Congress or passed by a board. There's a UCC. There are many laws that were passed by the civil government. So here, the Rajah's distinction is much more difficult. These are clearly laws that are passed by a government, not simply by an independent judge. However, Apol Pike, according to Reif Paiskim, because the government does not have a kpeda, because the government doesn't insist that the laws be these rules be followed, they're perfectly happy if you arbitrate based on whatever rules or whatever halachas you want. Therefore, these private halachas would not apply. Now the Shach, because of these questions, the Shach wants to know like this. We're saying that our kois, we're going to follow halacha, we're not going to follow din al-mahus adin. On the other hand, we said before that a law which is passed by Tayyibas B'nai HaMedina, it's passed for the benefit of society, there we will say din al-mahus adin. Frech the Shach, where do you draw the line? Every law that's passed, unless it's a very corrupt government, every law that's passed is nominally or officially there to help society. So Zag the Shach, if you're going to say that Tayyibas B'nai HaMedina is Dina Machus Adina, you'll end up overriding the entire Chayish Mishpat, the entire Halacha. And therefore the Shach argues on the Ramah, and the Shach says Dina Machus Adina is limited only to cases which directly involve the government, or Tevas HaMelech. Tevas B'nai HaMedina, the Shach argues in the Ramah and says there will be no Dina Machus Adina. Now, as a matter of halacha, there are a lot of, you know, more contemporary cases which are a lot of back and forth. I mean, for example, there's an issue of rent control. Nimr Yoshua says, rent control is Tevas B'nai HaMedina. It's Tevas B'nai HaMedina. It has to do with land use. And therefore, the Imam Yosher says that Dina Machus Adina will apply, and even though it's between two Jews, it's between two private parties, we're going to apply the concept of Dina Machus Adina. Along comes the Chavatel Sasharim, and he says, slow down a minute. Tevas B'nai HaMedina means it's better for society. Is rent control really better for society? Well, it depends who you ask. The tenants are all going to say yes. The landlords are going to say no. Zogel Chavetzel Sasharim, discriminating or passing a law for some people's benefit at the expense of other people. That's not Tevas B'nai HaMedina. He continues and says that it's Yadua, that the people who passed these laws were really socialists and communists. It's connected to Torah. And he says you would not say Dina Machus Adina on rent control. Again, as a matter of halacha, both Imre Yosher argues on the Chavetzel Sasharim. The Dvid Misharim says that not only does he agree with Imre Yosher, he says you can't even say Kimli, you can't even, he says that as a Dabar Pasha, you're going to follow rent control rules. And lastly, you have one more factor which we'll end with, and that is that Digros Moshe adds that in many cases, Dina Machus Adina is irrelevant. Why? Din al-Machus Adina is a nice philosophical shaila of whether the Din al-Machus has a toikif in halacha or it doesn't. Even if it doesn't have a toikif, we know that minhag mevakel halacha. If there are minhagim, if there are expectations, Adover sheba momoin, the tenai is kayim. The reason is simple. Whenever you enter, when you rent a house, whenever you enter into a deal with someone, you're stand, unless you speak out otherwise, you're implicitly agreeing to follow the norm, accepted business practices, the norm, the minhag. Zog the Yidras Moshe, even if you're going to tell me that we paskin like the Chavetzel Sashayin, even if we paskin, there's no dina de machus dina because it's not Tevis Fenehem Medina. But clearly, a concept such as rent control changes our expectations and creates a minhag. And therefore, when you move into a unit, unless you explicitly made a tenai to the contrary, you're agreeing to accept the laws, you're agreeing to abide by the minhag, and therefore the Yiras Moshe says it would have a tekev in Allah. I'd just like to end off. As we've gone through, this morning we've gone through some of the different shitas on dinam lachus dinam. There are many prote dinam, but I think one thing is very clear. Chazal and halacha recognize that a person has a very strong responsibility to society and to the people that are around him. Although, as we mentioned before, there's no pasuk in the Torah telling you, discussing many of the different laws and the regulations that we're subject to. Clearly, halacha recognizes our responsibilities to be good citizens, our responsibilities to behave in a responsible way to society at large. We're a middle level. Amol, there was a time when the Bali Musa wanted to scare a person and bring out the chaymer and the severity of the Yom Hadin, all they needed to do is point to the concept of a malchus. They would point to the honor and the kavod that a king, that a czar had. They would remind people of the tremendous pacha, the tremendous fear that people had of government. And that would be enough to be ma'ir a person to tshuva. It would remind him of his frailty, of his weakness. I think it's no coincidence that today we've lost much of this fear, much of this ma'ir malchus. We've lost much of our intimidation and our respect for authority. And I think it's no coincidence that spills over in many ways to our avodas Hashem. And a person loses all respect for his authority, for society around him. It's very difficult for him suddenly on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to switch modes and suddenly be makabel all malchus shemayim with appropriate pachad and the appropriate fear. And I think that's one of the reasons why Chazal put such an emphasis on dinam lachus dinam. Not only because of the obligations and the responsibilities to society around us, but for ourselves as well. So that we should have our own appreciation for authority. We should understand our limits, understand our obligations to the people around us. And we should then channel that, not simply for the dina l'malchus dina, but for our kabbalos ol malchus shemayim as well.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.